You're listening to the Civic Media Spotlight, where we recap segments from radio shows around the Civic Media Network this past week. To kick off this second hour, we go to the Earl Ingram Show, where Earl and guest host Sandy Williams sat down for an interview with U.S. Senator Ron Johnson. To hear the complete interview between Earl, Sandy, and Senator Johnson, head over to the Civic Media website to find the podcast for the Earl Ingram Show. You can also follow the podcast wherever you subscribe to podcasts. Now, here's Earl Ingram.
Good morning and welcome to a very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing good, Earl. How are you?
I'm really fine, man. We've been waiting on this day for a while. We're really excited. It's Friday. That means my co-host Sandy Williams is on board. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. It's a dangerous, perilous drive out here. There was some kind of an accident. I had to detour to get here early enough so we could meet with the senator before we started on the air here.
Yeah, well, we've got a very special guest, as promised. I want to say good morning to Senator Ron Johnson. Good morning to you, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. Love that bumper music. Enjoyed our initial conversation here. Hope we didn't steal all of our thunder. But
no, that we got nothing to say.
No.
You can just all
silent mics for an hour.
Yeah, we want to first off thank you for accepting the invitation. You know, sometimes it's hard to get elected officials, even if they're school board members, to come and sit down and have a conversation, let alone a United States senator. So we're very much appreciative of you accepting the invitation.
I appreciate the invitation. As I said, I'm an open book. I based on my time frame, I like doing this stuff.
Yeah. So Sandy, I think there was something you wanted to say.
Well, you know, one of the things we did before when you were scheduled earlier and rescheduled, but before that and then ongoing, we've had a process in which listeners could access a website and come up with questions that they were interested in asking you. And then there was an algorithmic process to try and weight those questions based on the importance that people put on it. Everyone who came in, they wrote a question, then they looked at all the other questions and they weighted them and whatever. And it was interesting.
So who came up with that algorithm? Because that's a hot topic now with AI.
Yeah, I know. Well, algorithm isn't the right word. You know, algorithm just means a mathematical formula, for God's sake. But the process was interesting because the questions that it then produced for us didn't relate to what's ongoing right now in Congress. It didn't relate to immigration. It didn't relate to Ukraine. It really related much more to what this show talks about a great deal, which is sort of Tom, Dick, and Mary and their situation and the things that they worry about. And so we thought maybe today we would try to focus more on that. You've had plenty of questions pestering you about what's going on right now, and everyone's probably understanding what the answers would be. So we thought we'd address that more directly. And I thought I'd tee it up by something that we've talked about on the show, which is essentially the budget that Tom, Dick, and Mary face, the median income family. And it ends up that the median income in Wisconsin is $73,300. And that sounds like enough, but it's two breadwinners. And so that's the average. And the average family has 1.5 kids. The average tax on that income is $18,000. The health bill that they would pay for buying their own insurance, because they probably have to with that kind of income level, is over $16,000. The average rent or housing cost is $20,000. If they have daycare, it's going to be $16,000. You end up going through a process where I haven't even plugged in utilities or anything to do with a car or anything else, and you've chewed up $73,000. And so the Wall Street Journal today pointed out that even though the economy is robust, you know, we talk about it in this macro basis, economists say things are going great. And we said that during the Trump years. We're saying that during the Biden years. The analysis by the Wall Street Journal said that the economy during all that period was robust, but the party out of power thought it wasn't, and the party in power thought it was in each case. But Tom, Dick, and Mary have struggled through that whole time period. And my question is, can't government do something about this? If these people moved to another country, they wouldn't have the health care costs that I just listed. They wouldn't have the education debt that they have. They wouldn't have a whole bunch of these. And furthermore, when I started in work and you started in work and when all these things were different because there was a single breadwinner that got you the middle class, you had health care at work, and now you don't. So what do we do about that?
Well, first of all, let's talk about things we agree on. I agree we should be talking about this because that is what most people are concerned about. I mean, we've got issues, as you say, in Washington, D.C., and you know they come and go, but you know people have to live their lives. And I think the good news is on the major goals in life, we share those goals. You know, we want safety. We want security. We want a level of prosperity and opportunity so we can raise our kids. We want to be able to raise our kids the way we want to. So those are areas we agree on. And one thing I learned coming from the private sector is you don't accomplish much in the private sector arguing all the time. You try and focus on the areas of agreement. You have something I want to buy. I want to buy it. Okay, good. That's an area of agreement. Now we can argue over what the price is. So you asked me, so first of all, I hope you're not saying that's my fault. I know you're not. You know, again, solutions are not easy. One thing government has done is mortgage our children's future. We're approaching $35 trillion in debt. And the Uniparty, during the pandemic, a spending blowout. We went from spending $4.4 trillion for the federal government in 2019 to now we pretty well got a baseline of $6.4 trillion. A dollar you held at the start of the Biden administration is now worth 85 cents. And again, I'm not laying that at all, there's spending we probably didn't need to do when Biden came in office, but there was trillions spent before that. You print all these dollars, it causes inflation, and that damage is done. So you've got inflation that's come down now, but a dollar is worth 85 cents, which does not help a family making $73,000. The cost of a mortgage has doubled for a new home. Interest rates went up to, approaching 7%, back and down a little bit. So again, there's a lot of stuff when government spends money it doesn't have, and that's what we're doing now. We had a $2 trillion deficit last year, and that's unsustainable.
Let me just follow up on that, though, because part of the reason for the deficit is we reduce tax. I mean, the deficits are the result of revenue stream in and expenditures going out, and we have reduced revenues in the process, and the deficits were partially.
I think most Americans like to keep their hard-earned money.
We can
argue whether the tax cuts from 2017-2018 paid for themselves. They were well on their way of paying for themselves. Again, you can all how you. But again, in general, I would like Americans to keep more of their hard-earned money than to ship it off to government. That status score was $1.5 trillion. Last year, we just had a $2 trillion deficit, and that's because of spending, going from $4.4 trillion to $6.4 trillion. It's primarily a spending problem.
So before we get down that road, I don't want us to miss out on the fact that the American people aren't making a wage or earning enough money. We can go down the road about the tax breaks and all those things, but that doesn't address the fact that the average American is struggling to even survive, and it's not getting any better. That's the real issue. That's the real question, whether or not
that's one of the reasons you want businesses to maintain as much of their profits as possible so they can reinvest it into their factories and pay higher wages. The more you tax businesses, the less money they have to increase wages.
Senator, except that the record after the tax cut was a great deal of buyback. I mean, the businesses invest money if it's going to improve their share price, and they do a calculation.
If they buy back their shares, that goes back to the shareholders, and then those shareholders take that money and probably invested in other things. That's the way a free market economy works. There's not necessarily anything bad about how the money flows through the economy. What you want to do is you want to incentivize economic activity. You want people, entrepreneurs, to be able to have resources and access to capital markets.
Yeah. It's not working for the average American.
It's working for a lot of people, and it works a whole lot better than socialist systems do as well. So again, it's not perfect. Okay. But, our government's not perfect. Our tax system is way too complex.
So tell the American people who are struggling on a day-to-day basis, we can't accept that government's not perfect. People are saying we're Americans, we live in the wealthiest nation on earth, and we deserve to not struggle the way we are struggling. That's what's at the center of what I think Sandy is clearly stating.
Well, again, I think one of the divides, and I think, quite honestly, the greatest threat to this nation right now is the division. It's a horrible division.
Well, the division
and let me just quick say, it's unfortunate because we're not a naturally divided people. As I started out earlier saying, you know, we share the same goals. So why are we so divided? I would argue it's because there are people that are pushing division. And I wish they would stop. So, again, I'm trying to focus on the areas of agreement. But, you know, how do you actually grow an economy so it's successful?
You know, the economy is exploding.
We do know how to do it.
The economy is not the issue. It's exploding. Whether or not the average person is getting a share of that is the issue.
And that's always an issue in terms of allocation of resources. Listen, I do not like the growing wealth gap. You know, I had my own proposals called a true Warren Buffett tax. So I would have taken all the C corps, I would turn them into pass-through entities, tax business income at the shareholder level. I mean, you have to get into the beauty of the plan. There's some really good, but one of the main things it would do is it'd stop all this accumulation of cash in C corps that never gets taxed at the shareholder level. That'd be one of the solutions. Again, it's kind of wonkish maybe, but that's one of the things I would try and do to try and decrease that wealth gap, which I do not think is healthy.
But just when you get to this budget, the thing that I got into this, I'm an economist sort of at heart and believe in free market, the rest of it. But taxes aren't the problem for this family. If you cut their tax in half to $9,000, they'd still be living paycheck.
No, I would say currently right now inflation was a big problem.
Well, inflation.
When a dollar starts and it becomes 85 cents, and the fact you have this looming debt. So guys, the debt crisis, when it hits, and it will hit.
So
when the debt crisis hits, it's not going to be very much.
We have to do this.
We have to take a break.
844-967-2789 is the number. Very special edition of the Earl Ingram Show. We're on it to have Senator Ron Johnson in the studio. Our phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to 540 AM WAUK, the Earl Ingram Show.
The Earl Ingram Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 8 till 10. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
Welcome back to the Civic Media Spotlight. We now head to the Todd Alba Show, where Todd was joined this week by friends of the show, Trigvi Olson and Pat Kreitlow, to discuss what's going on in Washington, D.C., or better yet, what's not going on in the nation's capital. If you like what you hear, be sure to follow the Todd Alba Show and all of Civic Media's programming on your favorite social media platform.
Live from the Civic Media World Headquarters in Madison, Wisconsin, it's the Todd Alba Show. And now, pursuing truth wherever it may lead, here's your host, Todd Alba.
Across Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and streaming worldwide on the Civic Media app. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Todd Alba, along with our producer and engineer, the fantastic Mr. Aaron Zommers on the board. We are high atop State Street, a block off the Capitol Square, the world headquarters of Civic Media, our friend and colleague, the host of Up North News Radio every morning. From 6 until 8, Pat Kreitlow joins us from beautiful Lake Wissota in northern Wisconsin, and Trigvi Olson, a native of River Falls, Wisconsin himself, and now with the Lincoln Project, like me, a former Republican, worked for guys like Mitch McConnell and John McCain and others, and Scott McCallum here in Wisconsin, and is now with the Lincoln Project as a senior advisor, a Renaissance man. Mr. Trigvi Olson joins us from an undisclosed location on the road. Gentlemen, how are you?
Good. Can we clarify in one of those earlier sentences whether there was a comma in there when you said you are high atop State Street?
He wouldn't be the first one to be high atop State Street.
Or working in radio.
Right.
There's a reputation there for a reason, kids.
Yeah, that's right.
But We are the sober, serious voices of Wisconsin Talk Radio. Well,
at least one of those is true.
One of my favorite lines. At least one. I know this is a controversial movie for some people, but Love Actually, have you guys all seen that? One of the storylines is kind of this washed up rocker. And on one of the shows, he looks in the camera and he goes, "Kids, listen to your Uncle Billy. Say no to drugs. Don't buy drugs. Become a pop star. And they give them to you for free."
That movie also has a Wisconsin connection because one guy can't find a girl to sleep with him, so he goes to Wisconsin.
Milwaukee. He lands in the Milwaukee International Airport.
Oh, dear.
It's fantastic. Anyway, we'll talk about that more later. Speaking of weird storylines, let's go to Washington, D.C. One of the basics of politics is to count. You have to count. And so they brought up the impeachment of the Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas in the House yesterday, Pat Kreitlow, didn't go so well for the Republicans.
No, you never, never go to the floor until you have the votes or know you have the votes. And I have to admit, I made that rookie mistake once. I thought one of my bills was all good to go. And on that session day, one of my colleagues came up and said, "You know, two of us aren't with you on this bill yet." I said, "What? I thought you were." It's like, "You never actually asked us." It's like, "Oh, okay." So I was embarrassed. I had to pull the bill and work with them, you know, further to work some things out. And that's fine. I was a rookie legislator. This guy's Speaker of the House.
Right?
It was just an embarrassment.
It is. It's ungovernable. It shows how their ability not to govern, to use a double negative there. You bring up Pat, bring up Derek Van Orten. I have a new name for him, Do Nothing Derek, because here's a guy who, like the Do Nothing Congress, the Republican side of the House especially, they say they want all this reform for immigration. You have a conservative U.S. senator like Lankford from Oklahoma, Kristen Sinema, an independent from Arizona, and help me out, Marie, is it from Connecticut, the Democrat?
Chris Murphy from Connecticut.
Chris Murphy, thank you, from Connecticut. A true, actual bipartisan bill that would actually have real results, and President Joe Biden says he'll sign it into law. But the Republicans in the House say it's dead on arrival. Do Nothing Derek just says, "I don't want to do anything about this." And now he votes for impeachment of Alejandro Mayorkas. This guy is just a nut job.
Okay, well, that was true beforehand. You're looking at causation and correlation over here.
Remember,
but as far
I'm
as this one goes, look, the comeback to Derek Van Orden and to Scott Fitzgerald, who's trying to defend this, and to every Republican, is simply this. Same as health care. Where's your plan? Mm-hmm. Where's your plan for the border? And keep in mind, whatever you're about to utter needs to get 60 votes in the Senate. So what is your plan that would get 60 votes in the Senate? And when they stammer and say, "Well, this one's not good," fine, what's yours? And much like healthcare and infrastructure and other things, they don't have a plan.
Pat, you live up there in Lake Wissota and just north of the beautiful Chippewa Valley area, or in the Chippewa Valley. I think a lot of folks, and give me your take on this as someone who lives on the ground, we all know, all three of us know, the value of migration labor, immigrant labor to the dairy industry, to Wisconsin's ag industry. And here you have something that could actually be supportive of Wisconsin ag producers, a legal way to get more help like this through legal migration. And Derek, Do Nothing Derek Van Orten's solution is to vote against that bipartisan bill and impeach or attempt to impeach the Secretary of Homeland Security.
And by the way, with Derek Van Orden being in his first term and with Mike Gallagher getting some bonus points for, you know, his video that he recorded on January 6th, in some other universe, those two could have been the perfect 1-2 punch from the 3rd District and the 7th District, just wrapped around Western and Northern Wisconsin. They could have been the ones to say, on behalf of America's dairyland, the rural economy, et cetera, we want to go forward on immigration reform, starting with year-round agricultural visas for dairy farm workers, because right now all agricultural visas are seasonal only. So every migrant laborer who's undocumented on a dairy farm doesn't have a visa because we don't have anything that exists. They could have fought for that and so many things, and more moderate Republicans would have said, yeah, if only they'd had the testicular fortitude to lead the way, and they most assuredly do not.
I like that. I like that a lot, actually. Coming up tomorrow, about 2 minutes left here in this segment, Mr. Kreitlow. So remind us again who your guests are on Up North News Radio from 6 until 8.
That we are having the Women Win Wisconsin segment with Kristen Lyerly, Alicia Saunders, and Kelly Peterson. We'll also have Joe Zepecki, and we'll also have the latest results from the Marquette poll, which are being released almost as we speak, to see what the good folks of Wisconsin think of the 2024 campaign so far.
And Trigvi Olson, you've worked on polling and politics nationwide, worldwide. You confirm this or not. Charles Franklin and the folks at the Marquette Law School poll are some of the most respected people in the business, are they not?
Yeah, completely. I mean, they are the gold standard for what's going on in Wisconsin and have been for a long time. And Charles, you know, I've been on your show with Charles. Yeah. Charles is super smart, and politicos who do it for a living reach out to Charles and Craig Gilbert, who was on when I co-hosted for or guest hosted for you, and want to know their opinion because they know it as well as the guys running campaigns.
Yeah, absolutely.
Though I will add, even though the world's best poll on February 7th, almost 9 months before the election, is a snapshot. So, well, I'm always going to give that, and so I'll have that little disclaimer all the way through here.
As Charles Franklin likes to say, that polls don't vote, you do, right?
That's right.
All right, stay tuned. Thank you, Pat Kreitlow. Every morning, 6 until 8, we appreciate you. Back with Trigvi on the other side, your phone calls as well. This one goes out to the Secretary of Homeland Security. Back after this, the Todd Allbull Show on Civic Media.
The Todd Alba Show is part of the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekdays from noon till 2. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
You're listening to the Civic Media Spotlight. We now head north for a conversation on Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow. Between Pat and grassroots activists in northeastern Wisconsin considering running for office. Enjoy.
Welcome back at 7:34. This would be, of course, Dr. Lyerly's choice for walk-up music on our Women Win Wisconsin segment, as we have every Thursday morning here. And this time the focus is partially on Dr. Lyerly and two other women in Northeast Wisconsin who are looking at the 8th Congressional District and other races therein as possibilities for women to step up and make some big changes in the year 2024, Kristen.
We are doing something really unique in Northeastern Wisconsin. We've seen so much fear and division, and as a result, lack of progress and lack of problem solving, that we've decided to come together, to unify, to work together to solve common problems that everybody cares about. So this morning, I couldn't be more excited to introduce two colleagues who I've been working very closely with, Kelly Peterson and Alicia Saunders. The three of us have put our heads together, and we are dedicated to making sure that we have great representation in Congress from the 8th Congressional District. All three of us are looking at potentially running for this seat. So ladies, Kelly, Alicia, welcome to Women Win Wisconsin.
Thank you. So happy to be here.
Nice to have you both here. Well, Kelly, let's start with you. Just get a little background on what you do, what you've done, why you're thinking about some great new endeavor.
Right. So I've been a journalist for, 24, 25 years. So I'm a former journalist. I'm an educator. And I have a passion for taking this country in the right direction. Look, we are going in the wrong direction. Congress is going in the wrong direction. Look at the debacle that we just saw over the past 2 days in the Republican Party. We can do better. Wisconsin can do better. This is not a functioning Congress. We need to be better. And that's one of the reasons why I'm considering running. I want to see a change for the positive with this country and the state of Wisconsin and District 8.
And Alicia, how about you? Let's have a little background on you and what you're considering and why.
I'm a Navy veteran, a single mom of two, a blue collar worker, middle class, working paycheck to paycheck like the majority of Americans. Honestly, women's reproductive rights are disappearing. LGBTQI plus rights are under attack. Our children's futures are disappearing. The promises our government made to the BIPOC community have never been kept. Our veterans are used as pawns on the daily basis. Our college students and graduates are drowning in debt. Our farmers are being forgotten, and our planet is dying. Honestly, we need people in Congress that understand that they work for the people and are there to work for the people instead of lining their pockets and moving forward into other positions in power.
Kristen, when you said that maybe a movement is getting started in Northeast Wisconsin, I think I see what you're talking about.
You know, I know it's unusual because we are so used to seeing people step up as candidates saying, I want to hold this office. But we need something different. The world has changed and we need to really work together. And I know I've said together numerous times already this morning, but really that is what we have to see. And something really unique about these women is that they've not run for public office before. But Kelly, there was something, there was a spark that made you go, this is my role. This is something that I have to do. Tell us about that spark.
27 bills is what Congress, is what Gallagher and Congress passed last year. We have, that's the fewest bills passed since the Great Depression. That's what sparked me. And our reproductive rights. And I think another spark, Kristen and Alicia, is how we're working together. We see both sides of the aisle always debating and always attacking. How about this? As Mike Gallagher even said, how about we work together? It was a quote from his website that he had up. How about we work together to get things done? How about we're not inactive? How about we become active in Congress? Wouldn't that be cool?
Yeah, that's so famous for Mike Gallagher to say something like that, but to not do it. We see this all the time. And Alicia, nowhere more do we see this talking out of two sides of his mouth than when it comes to veteran issues. And for you as a veteran who is affected on the ground, when Mike Gallagher, a veteran himself, says he's going to do something and then fails to follow through, you see that failure.
Oh, exactly. I mean, you go back to the PACT Act. He voted against it twice. And the only reason he voted for it was because his constituents called him and called him and called him on it. He should have voted on that like that. Number one, yes. No problem. He voted against the Veterans Service Recognition Act that would help non-citizen veterans. These are people that signed up as non-citizens committed to our United States Constitution. He should have been on board with any help for any veterans. But yet he continues to work party line and continues to go farther and farther to the right.
And give us a reminder of the PACT Act for those of us who are out there and aren't familiar with what that means.
The PACT Act has to do with toxic fume exposure. The biggest focus was burn pits because in Iraq and Afghanistan, they would have these huge burn pits where they would burn anything and everything. And the fumes coming from those pits harmed our troops' lungs. And we've got veterans that are coming up with cancer and all kinds of different sinus issues because of the burn pits. Another part of the PACT Act is exposure to jet fuel. I was in the aviation field. I was exposed to jet fuel on a daily basis. And even today, I have sinus issues because of that. So
veterans are getting sick because of what was happening on base, and Mike Gallagher refused to support them and support their continuing health concerns.
Yes, and he wasn't the only Wisconsin Republican that voted no on these things, which, yep. By the way, lest people go, you know, well, is this a case of spending? No, this was mainly, if I understand correctly, just to make sure that instead of forcing every veteran to prove that it was the burn pits that caused their malady, it put the burden of proof, it removed that burden of proof that it was more likely that than not that you would rule in the veterans' favor so that they could get the health care that they need. This was a gimme from a legislative standpoint and took way too long for Congressman Gallagher and the others to come along on this.
Yeah, go ahead, Kelly. I just wanted to also mention that my husband's a veteran. He did 20 years in the United States Air Force. Very, very proud of him. And yeah, he refueled midair, and he's got some medical issues as well. So Gallagher, that's Kristen. When you ask what sparked me, that's another issue that sparked me.
And an issue that has sparked all of us, and that is really important to call out, is reproductive rights. And nowhere does Mike Gallagher fail more tremendously than on reproductive rights. Kelly, tell us about Mike Gallagher's record on reproductive rights and your fears if he continues to serve as a congressman for Wisconsinites.
Well, look, treating women as baby factories is morally wrong. We all know that. And if we look at some of the track across the United States, travel bans, there have been proposed travel bans for Texas, Tennessee, Missouri, and Oklahoma. We can't have that happen in Wisconsin. We need to stand up for what we believe in, and that is for reproductive rights. This, Kristen and Alicia, we all know, is just such a huge concern for us. Such a huge concern. And it's something we need to stand up to. It's one of the main reasons, again, why I'm sitting here talking to you.
Alicia, this is a key reason for you as well. Give us a little perspective on what this means to you and why this is important.
To me, it seems like they're literally trying to relegate us back to property and tell us that we don't know how to feel and what to think with an issue on reproductive rights. Like, they don't want us to be able to have rights over our own bodies. Even Mike Gallagher said on the overturn of Dobbs, he said the power to make abortion law should have always rested with elected officials, not the Supreme Court. Today's decision correctly returns this authority to legislatures and gives the American people a direct say in the way abortion is governed in their state. This is a historic ruling that will undoubtedly protect millions of unborn lives.
Yeah, elected officials.
they have no space, no reason to make medical decisions for Wisconsin women, American women. Mm-hmm. There is no reason for them to be in the doctor's office and making legislation telling us how our bodies need to be treated.
Exactly. And to be very clear, Mike Gallagher has voted for, he actually introduced the Life Begins at Conception Act, which is a total abortion ban. He also co-sponsored a 6-week abortion ban. He is all in on a national abortion ban. And it gets even deeper mm-hmm. than that. He has voted against access to contraception. Mike Gallagher has voted against access to contraception. This is not just about abortion. This is about his religious zealotry invading our personal lives.
It's deeply concerning, Kristen, Alicia. Okay. I sometimes get speechless because it's just so concerning. And it just, Kristen, so how many patients did you have when we saw Roe, when Roe fell?
How many patients did I have?
Yeah.
When, like, in a day?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So many. Yeah. I mean, 20 or 30 patients a day who would be coming in looking for advice, looking for information so that they could make their own decisions. You know, you can't make a decision in a vacuum, but you have to make a decision based on where you're at in your life and what kind of support you have.
Yeah.
Ladies, the work to have some change in the 8th Congressional District is not just being done at the individual level, as you and others may consider running in the race, but from the standpoint of just the district in general. And there is actually a political action committee that is more district focused than on any one candidate, Kristen, right?
Yeah. So like I said earlier, this is a unified effort. And one of our dear teammates, Julie Hancock, who I'm sure we're going to have on in a couple weeks, Julie was a write-in candidate against Mike Gallagher in the last cycle. Julie has put together, she's an attorney, and she's put together a PAC dedicated to electing a Democrat in November. So whoever ends up being the Democratic candidate for the general election, that's what this PAC will support. And that's what Pat is sharing here. NewBluePAC.org is the URL for the website. I encourage you to go to it, check it out. There are links there, importantly, to Mike Gallagher's record. And, you know, we don't need to bash Mike Gallagher personally, and we wouldn't do that. But Mike Gallagher's record is really, it's incriminating. It's ridiculous. It's terrible. He's been walking a very fine line for a long time, and we're starting to see that crumble now with some of the recent news. And Kelly, I'm sure you have been watching the news very closely. What's your take on some of the things that have been happening recently with Representative Gallagher?
It's a mess. It's a mess, and it's an embarrassment. I wish if we could keep going, if we could just keep going, it's a mess. Sometimes I just get baffled, but yeah, there's more we can do, and there's more we can do together and move Wisconsin forward.
Mm-hmm. And again, to learn more about that, the PAC is called New, N-E-W for Northeast Wisconsin, newbluepac.org. And that's where you'll learn more about the issues, more about the district. But then, of course, from these women, I'm sure we will be hearing more from Kelly Peterson from De Pere, Alicia Saunders from Kimberly, and of course, Kristen Lyerly, the pride of Kaukauna, all joining us here. And not a bit of rivalry among these three whatsoever in Northeast Wisconsin. A formidable team, and really, I'm so thankful, Kelly and Alicia, that you could join us for this today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. When we come back, we will be back here at the Civic Media headquarters at the top of State Street, right off Capitol Square, where I'm sitting where Todd Alba and Luke Mathers brainstorm all of the fine programming that comes across these airwaves, or they just throw spitballs at each other based on the mess that I'm seeing here. One way or another, we'll get to the bottom of it coming up in just a bit. You're up north.
Up North News Radio with Pat Kreitlow is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs on select Civic Media stations weekday mornings from 6 until 8. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.
We end this weekend's Civic Media Spotlight for an update on polling from the Marquette University Law School on the Devil's Advocates radio show.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Thank you to our most recent guest, James Santel, fine former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. And now we're joined by another good friend. He is pollster extraordinaire, Charles Franklin, Marquette University Law School poll. Charles, I love when you come around with the new polling. Welcome to the Devil's Advocates, sir.
Good new election year. Lots of polling still to come, but looking forward to talking about this one today.
Top line here. The presidential race. I'm here in Las Vegas, in Nevada, because there was a quote-unquote presidential primary. There's something of a rigged caucus tomorrow night. But you have taken a snapshot of the Wisconsin voters. What do they think? Trump v. Biden. Where do we stand?
49-49 with registered voters. 50 for Trump, 49 for Biden with likely voters. When we add in third-party votes, it stretches to a three-point Trump lead.
Well, Charles, let's talk about Nikki Haley. I'm here in Las Vegas in Nevada. Nikki Haley finished a distant second to none of these candidates in a primary where Donald Trump wasn't on the ballot. How did she poll with Wisconsinites on the current Marquette University poll?
Well, not a whole lot better. In fact, a little worse. She got 22% against Trump's 64% here for the primary matchup.
Sure.
But with about 15% undecided. Now, that's double what Haley got in November, so she has come up. But Trump has shot up from 38 in November to 64 now. Haley's consolidated the people in the Republican Party that don't like Donald Trump. She's getting 77% of the vote from people that don't like Trump in the party, but it just ain't big enough.
We're, what, about 9 months out from the general election? But currently, there seems to be a real enthusiasm gap between those that say they support Donald Trump. They seem quite enthusiastic. And those that say, yeah, I'm going to vote for Joe Biden, you know, probably. There's a gap, is there not, sir?
There's a huge gap there. With those voters who say they're very enthusiastic about voting, Trump has a huge lead over Biden. But for those that are somewhat enthusiastic, not very enthusiastic, not at all enthusiastic, Biden has a big lead with each of those three groups. Can you get those less enthusiastic voters to turn out? Biden's got to have them despite their reservations or lack of enthusiasm. If this just were to come down to the folks most fired up right now, it'd be Trump in a walk. But the less enthusiastic folks like Biden quite a bit. They're just not thrilled with him. The other thing is 18% say they have an unfavorable view of both Biden and of Trump. And so we want to watch that number over the course of the year and see if people ultimately decide they actually do like one of these people, or if that doesn't happen, what happens to the votes of those people that dislike both? That's a recipe for these third party candidates to potentially do better than normal. In Wisconsin, in 2020, we had less than 3% vote third party. But in 2016, it was almost 6% that voted third party. And of course, a very close race that Trump won.
Charles, the economy, always a big topic during election time, the national economy, the Wisconsin economy, jobs reports from last month revised up 100,000. Currently, we're at looking at what, 350,000. Inflation seems to be down. I think, you know, some folks are feeling like it's getting better, the numbers, but it's not really resonating perhaps down to the voters yet. What did you find on the national and Wisconsin level?
Well, for the first time in a while, we actually saw views of the economy pick up by about 10 points better this month than it was in November. That matches the national polling that has shown increases. And in one closely watched measure of the economy, they had their biggest uptick since the 1990s in their December poll. Now, here's the fly in the ointment. It is steadily up since 18 months ago in June of 2022. But it's still well below where it was in late 2019 before the pandemic. And so while it's moving in the right direction, public opinion about the economy remains well below where it was. Views of the Wisconsin economy are quite a bit better than views of the national economy. About half as many say Wisconsin is doing poorly compared to the national. And even among Republicans who are quite negative about the national economy, they're negative, but they're half as negative in Wisconsin's economy. So here at home, things look better than when we cast our gaze on the country as a whole.
And I've got to ask about my favorite senator from the state of Wisconsin, Tammy Baldwin. She's on the ballot in 2024. It's her turn. And the Republicans, I'm not sure who they've got. I've heard Eric Hudvey. I've heard this other Scott Mayer, I think, businessman. And I've heard Dom's buddy, David A. Clark Jr., might jump into the race. What does your polling tell us about this fine matchup to be?
Mostly we're waiting for there actually to be a Republican candidate before we ask about a horse race between the two. But what we did ask was those three Republican maybe candidates and Tammy Baldwin on a favorable, unfavorable rating. Baldwin's just slightly underwater on that, 4 points more unfavorable than favorable. But Hovde and Scott Mayer in particular are over 80% who say they don't know who these people are. But until they get in and start campaigning and introducing themselves to voters, we really can't learn very much about how they're going to perform over the summer and fall.
You told me after a couple of years you guys were polling on the question of legalizing marijuana, Dom's favorite question he asked of John Podesta in Vegas one time. But Charles, what is the current voter sentiment on legalizing recreational and medicinal marijuana?
Medical, it's huge. It's 87% in this poll. Just gigantic. And 78% of Republicans favor legal marijuana. Now, we didn't ask about the details of the Republican proposal that they were talking about just in general. But when you go to just legalization straight up, not for medical purposes, it's 63% in favor. Republicans split dead evenly on that, but big majorities of independents and Democrats favor legalizing. That has been the case for several years now. So this is a case where the majority of public opinion is very clear. but the legislature's unwillingness to act on legislation for years now just prevents anything from happening.
Speaker Robin Voss, am I true in saying he is the most unpopular Wisconsin politician you polled this time?
In this sample, yes. Notice the guy is elected by 1/99th of the state, one legislative district out of 99.
Charles Franklin, our fine guest, Marquette University Law School poll. Charles, always appreciate when you come down and go inside the numbers. Charles Franklin, thank you so much. More Devil's Advocates.
The Devil's Advocates radio show is affiliated with the Civic Media Radio Network and airs across the network weekday evenings from 4 till 6. To learn more about this show and all of the Civic Media programming, check out the website at civicmedia.us/shows.